Greetings, Meltopians. Are you looking to delve deeper into the world of Meltopia? Then check out our Patreon, where you can find written mythos pieces, world maps, found footage, art, Patreon-exclusive shows, and more. Just go to patreon.com/Meltopia and join one of our tiers for access to great new content. Brave the forbidden and embrace the darkness.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Meltopia Podcast. For our oldest and most loyal listeners out there, we wanted to let you know about our new Patreon page. Outside of our careers and time spent with family, the three of us here at Meltopia have been working every night and weekend for the past 5 years, building our company into what it is today. With your help, our goal is to make Meltopia our livelihood, allowing us to bring you higher quality content, exciting new podcast series, and published works, and a large central community for you to take part in. As a thank you for your support, we're offering exclusive perks and bonus content, like early access to podcast episodes, behind-the-scenes creator videos, and more. Go to patreon.com/Meltopia today and explore our membership levels. And be sure to scroll through for free public content, some of which gives you a sneak peek at what you can expect when you become a member. From Mark, Steve, and Walker, thanks again for enjoying our podcast, and we hope to meet you soon on Patreon.
You really should have hit me harder, or killed me, because I won't show any of you an ounce of mercy.
Lynn had summoned the void as she spoke, bringing it beneath the group of wanderers, letting it sup upon their solidity, their very existence. She could feel the appetite of oblivion, where she lived in its belly, or where it lived in hers. There was no telling at this point, no meaningful distinction. She toyed with them at first, annihilating their surroundings, reducing the world to whispers of a fading dream. Gregory, the one who had hefted her upon his shoulder, dropped her and extended his slush field, trying to dampen the living nullity that chewed through his body, intent on swallowing his soul. His attempt meant nothing to Lynn, because at that moment, she was nothing. There were three of them, all told, screaming for mercy. Taking to her feet, she feasted upon their fear, their misery, their pain. The effort fattened her sense of self, lit a squatter's fire in her heart, weak and scrawny, but a feeling, warmth, nonetheless. She might have relented had a missile not detonated nearby, its fire and rage devoured immediately by the unfolding void. It was the machine creature again, hovering slightly distant of her cosmic starvation. She lifted her hand, pointing the wanderer out. The oblivion, like some obedient dog, lurched at the designated target, filling the vacant air with an even more potent brand of absence, seeking out the rocketing monster. A crack formed in the benighted firmament, chasing the fleeing mechanoid, opening to a darkness that made the surrounding night seem like the blaze of a lightning bolt. As the thing sped away, barely escaping the grip of her power, she could feel another part of the oblivion, a larger share of the nothingness behind all things, offering itself to her, to overcome her current limitations, should she only ask. Lynn used the small fire in her gut to stoke a minute willpower, to rein herself in, to retain what was left of herself. As the Void Mother became a sense-stealer again, she surveyed the consequence of her indulgence. Everything around her, nearly half a block of space, had vanished. The absence, however, was not totaled by the span of decimated matter, but rather by its utter disappearance. The affected area had evaporated entirely. So it was that houses and trees on either side of the nullification were pulled closer together by the resulting vacuum, filling in the missing space as if it had never been. She'd allowed the wanderers to persist among the living, but only barely, their life having been largely digested into oblivion. It was certain the void had left its mark upon their souls. She looked towards the smoke where it piled into the night, flecked by flame and hot ash, and she walked to meet her fellow passengers. Along the way, she passed the fleeing shapes of dead witchers and felt the tremble of worried earth that typically followed the detonating of a bomb. She knew the dead knot was busy at his work. By the time she waded through so much smoke and fire, her gigantic teammate had apparently finished with one wanderer and was looming over another. A sturdily built man barely visible for the thick black smoke that tumbled from him. There were two others flanking him, a man and a woman. Keith was standing off to the side with what seemed an elderly couple, sporting a smile as long as the horizon.
Where there's smoke, there's fire. And where there's fire and gigantic craters in the earth, there's the dead knot.
Lynn said as she strolled into view, her smile a reasonable facsimile of Keith's. The sly expression was more for the wanderers, as her smile was as hollow as the huge hole in the street.
And the fearless leader emerges from the conflagration to take the reins of her people, spoiling for a fight as they were.
Which one is William?
Lynn demanded, having filled in most of the blanks as to what was happening.
Well then, allow me to introduce our current malefactor, William Church.
Cromwell told in tones of gravel and thunder, gesturing politely to the man buried in rolling black waves of smoke, eyes like black stars.
You guys is pretty cocky for a bunch who are about to get their tickets punched.
The man's concluding chuckle was palpable with false bravado, but he seemed willing to test his luck nonetheless.
The rest of your team is lucky to be breathing, and I'm in no mood to play games.
Lynn cautioned.
So we can either talk, or I can turn you and your people into screams. Choose.
A few tense seconds passed before William spoke.
We're all Malsapiens after all, right?
William replied.
I guess we can talk this over. Let's all take a walk to my place. Have ourselves a good old-fashioned sit-down.
Lynn turned to Keith.
I heard Hazel screaming back at the house. I hope she'd made it up here with you guys. And I haven't seen Mars at all.
The dead knot interjected at the news of Hazel.
I hope you've not injured our young regressor, Mr. Church. I'm afraid of what my brother might have me do to you.
The air went cold as the pale passenger's eyeless stare seemed to burrow into William.
I didn't order anyone killed. Just wanted you all to get under one roof was all, for a sit-down, you know?
The wanderer seemed to shrink beneath Cromwell's flowing shadow.
Keith, head back and see if you can find Mars and Hazel. Cromwell and I will make our way to Devon Street, since Mr. Church saw fit to destroy our home.
William flinched at the news, looking away from his captors. Keith looked to where the old man and woman stood examining the events with careful eyes.
My most sincere apologies, dear Theodore. I had no idea the evening would turn so sour so soon. Nothing spoils the spirit of a good time more than the perverse ugliness of unwanted company. Although, on this particular occasion, I feel the slight will be repaid in triplicate. Yes.
Keith looked to his leader, where she nodded grimly at the question.
Once I've located our wayward passengers, I'll see to it that your home is restored. I cannot express how awful I feel over the whole thing. You needn't worry yourself about all this, lad. This little shindig was a long time in the making, and I feel strongly that the night's portents will bode well for the general health of the city, if not poor William and his boys. Now, you just get along and find your fine people, and don't think again on poor old Theodore Limpinil. To be honest, I found the evening's entertainment to be far more delightful than in the evening prior. Yes, sir, this was as fine a dinner as ever this old man has had. Theodore's final smile fell upon the vanished menace of the leader of the Wanderers, where William winced beneath the heavy shadow of the ghastly passenger. The massive storm front obeyed the will of the king of the Oversapiens with dutiful enthusiasm, gathering itself into massive coils that encircled the lands wherein dwelt the lost kingdom, forming itself into a growling bulwark that headed off all but the most stalwart skyborn invader. Ingrin hovered at the heart of the curling storm, directing it with military precision. Once he was satisfied with its placement, he turned his will upon the frozen earth, plunging and pulverizing its surface until the outer approaches to his underground keep were as flat and smooth as slate, all while deeply furrowing the stone and dirt that immediately surrounded it. The way into his kingdom would be unshielded for any invading ground force, while his own legions would have ample cover from which to operate. Next, he called upon all the creatures that lurked the nearby land and water and sky, demanding their unflinching loyalty and spreading them out to serve as early warning systems. Should something stir within their preferred element, they would know, and so would he. Having sampled some measure of the enemy's forces, the psychic giant and the colossal monster insect, he'd selected his best people to lie in wait for them, Oversapiens whose powers were as splendid a counterforce as he could produce from his ranks. To better coordinate with his outer troops, each of them was equipped with an artifact from the Lost Kingdom, allowing instant communication between them. His legions were swelling by the day, thralls and spies and warriors, the living resources his people had cultivated in their time away from him. Making such forces viable tools for war were the chemical elixirs that Strogen had prepared. The overdoser was able to biologically synthesize just about any known chemical under the sun, and then some. Drawing upon the treasure trove that was his gift, he'd concocted certain cocktails that would vastly enhance the abilities of those who imbibed them. He was also experimenting with tonics that might go so far as to bolster the abilities of an Oversapien, though that work was still under development. All summed, the new preparations for war were uncertain protection from a largely unknown enemy, but, perhaps more importantly, the efforts had concentrated the spirits of his people, to say nothing of his own. For better or worse, he created a sense of hope for them, the possibility that their father could be felled by his children. He thought of Kronos and Zeus, how children have sometimes been the bane of their forebears, and hoped. After parting the tall doors that opened to the stony passage sloping down to the principal gates of his kingdom, he found Caleb the Weakener awaiting him.
"The Strahd have arrived. We've company."
Caleb smiled with a confidence that did not come from the overuse of his power. Ingrin returned the smile.
"Then let us speak with them."
The Strahd had come to the kingdom through the lower passages, where the vaults to the underworld lurked solemn and cyclopean, where a wind born from underground powers lapped at the ancient dust like an invisible tide. Their violet eyes pricked through the darkness like tiny stars, and they stood as still and silent as stone, waiting for the king of the Oversapiens to address them properly.
"Welcome, my friends. You do us a great honor by coming here. and we value your aid more than we can say, Angren extolled. Please, be seated.
His sweeping gesture indicated the great stone table surrounded by equally massive high-backed wooden chairs. Silently, they took their seats. While there was a certain racial uniformity to their features, their pale skin and violet eyes, they differed wildly by way of dress and features, as much as any humans. The most pronounced styles included long sable robes festooned with strange symbols, while others wore smart-fitting crimson outfits that approximated a sort of gothic flair found in human dress of that period. There was also a superficially human quality to their appearance that evaporated upon closer inspection. Something surely alien lurked the depths of these creatures, hiding behind a facade of elegant humanoid construction.
We only ask for separate quartering and solitude. No food or drink will be required. When the time comes that we are called upon, we will follow our own direction upon the battlefield. And naturally, the condition we have already agreed upon. If you find these terms acceptable, this alliance will be a formal one.
The Strahd Angren had previously met with did all the talking. Angren wondered if any of them would ever tender a name, or if he was to refer to them merely by their racial designation.
Then we do indeed have a formal alliance. I would, if you might indulge me, like to speak with you a moment longer before you are shown your chambers.
The apparent leader of the Strahd nodded his head.
Of course. Excellent. After our last conversation, I sent some of my people to track down the creatures you had hinted at. Those who had once brought the machine low.
Angren paused to observe any reaction to his statement. There was none.
What they encountered was, I must admit, not what was expected. They killed two of my people.
At this last part, there was a noticeable reaction from the violet-eyed audience. They all looked to their leader, who, for his part, nodded gravely.
Did you recover their bodies?
The Strahd asked.
We did not.
Angren paused again, studying the creature's strange eyes.
Then they are not dead, and you may be in more danger than you realize. More even than what the machine represents. None of your people should be out alone, and none of them should entreat any threat, no matter how trivial, without alerting you to it first. I told you what I did to give you hope for yourselves, not that you should seek out such creatures.
What are they? From what was described to me, they were more like slavering beasts than intelligent beings, let alone anything that might rise to the level needed to defeat the machine.
The Strahd looked down and shook his head as he seemed to weigh the moment.
You mistake simplicity for inferiority, good king. The Carnivian are not simple as much as elemental. Their souls partaking almost entirely from a hunger that informs all creatures their most basic drives. To hunt and kill and devour. This is the sum of the Carnivian. The very soul of hunger.
Does this change anything, as far as our arrangement is concerned?
Angren wanted to cut to the chase, know precisely where things stood. The speaker momentarily exchanged looks with his people before answering.
No, it does not.
Angren could see that the decision, while made quickly, was not an easy one. He wondered what made the dead Oversapien so valuable to these creatures. So much that they would risk a menace as baleful as the one outlined. He shivered while thinking again of the hell he'd spoken about with Caleb, the fate of any fallen Oversapien. These Strahd were more like carrion beasts than allies, it seemed to him now, but at least they were his carrion beasts. After the Strahd had been taken to their rooms, leaving behind the monstrous specter their words had created, Angren joined Caleb in the throne room. After sharing the details of the meeting, the weakener was silent for some time, chewing his lower lip and nodding his head as he collated the new information.
Maybe we should just run, take the kingdom further below and rethink our next move. Build ourselves up, Caleb finally offered. After all, we have no idea when a machine will even attack, and we're just sitting ducks for these other things.
We will never be stronger than we are right now. This spirit I have conjured, this hope, will die soon. Once it's gone, it can never be revived. Not unless we prove to ourselves that the machine can be beaten. If we run and hide, we will simply perish alone, huddled in the dark of some deep hole in the earth.
Caleb looked as if he'd been beaten down by his king's words and left for dead.
What about the auguries? There must be something there that can help us. Give us some sense of how all this would turn out.
The weakener's words outlined the grammar of desperation, his eyes almost pleading.
I have consulted all our oracles, chiefly the Harrow Box. The last session with it was performed with articles recovered from our exchange with the two monsters, the giant and the insectoid atrocity. The signs were clear. The machine is coming. Running at this point will not avail us. We will perform another session with articles belonging to both Adrian and Greth, considering what the Strahd have told us. But I suspect the outcome will do nothing to change the state of things. After all, the Strahd keep their own divining methods. They know the threat far better than we, and they have chosen to stay. We must make peace with ourselves, Caleb, with all that we've done, and steel our souls for the worst. For the hour of the Oversapiens is finally at hand.
Thank you once again for listening to another episode of the Maltopia Podcast. To help us grow and spread the word, we'd love nothing more than for you to like, comment, rate, and review us on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. You can also connect with us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, and tweet us on Twitter for the latest original artwork and important updates. And for even more about our ever-growing literary world, head to maltopia.com to read our dark fiction and gain access to giveaways and discounts with our newsletter.